turn the tables with Messiah tanking it up. I do not believe he just believed.
Bottom left. No, you might hit that. What? I cannot understand this game. Unicorns of love. It wasn't you said. The Nexus.
Hello and welcome to episode 487 of the League Rundown. This episode is lovingly titled, This One Was For His Team, Next One Is For the Luckskin. I will be your host for the day. You can call me Kangas, and I am joined by two esteemed hosts for our post-Worlds recap episode, the official episode. You might be confused since we did a Roster Mania one yesterday with zero rosters announced, but that is beside the point. We have joining us today, he's on the loose, we got Mongoose.
Hello. What? I'm being announced first. Let's go. Let's go.
You know,
go.
I'm just going in order
first
who's
time.
In the Discord call.
First
my bad,
time.
My bad.
Let's go. Remember the date.
November 21st, 2023, when I forgot that Badger is supposed to be introduced first. Speaking of, welcome, Badger. How's it going?
Oh, you know, I feel like we just did this. Didn't we just sit in a Discord call for 3 hours and talk about League of Legends?
We did just do this. There, for anybody who's confused as to why there's two episodes out this week, if you didn't listen to the first one and you're only listening to this one, we had an idea, more so ex-Energy General Manager Jonathan had an idea, because he was going to come onto the podcast as a guest. Rather than just talk about Worlds and dive into that, he thought, what if we did a roster announcement live episode? Since free agency began yesterday at 4 p.m. PST, yesterday being Monday, as of the day that we're recording this episode. And yesterday, over the 2.5 hours that we talked live on Twitch, speaking of, you can go follow the new League Rundown Twitch account. Not a single roster was announced.
I was going to say, it's a novel idea that we decided to do this, but then the only news that we were getting was all of the LCK teams announcing like the contracts expiring of the players and like a C9 tweet.
Team Liquid dropped that they're staying in Challengers.
Oh, true.
We'll have a Challenger team next year as well. But not only did we not have a roster announcement for any LCS or LEC team yesterday during the stream over a 2.5 hour period, we have, as of recording this, still not had a single roster confirmed. That is crazy.
We've had one announcement.
One announcement that Blabber is staying at Cloud9. That is exciting news. But what the hell is going on? The global free agency began, and nobody is locking in a roster. This is kind of unprecedented for League Esports. I remember back in the day when there would be like, as soon as free agency started, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes would go and we'd get the first announcement. Generally, it'd be a team like Team Liquid, maybe TSM, some of those teams that like really went hard on big players that they were signing and bringing over. Maybe it's just one of the side effects of the times changing and the roster building philosophies changing as well. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. We can talk about the Blabber signing. Mongoose, are you surprised?
Not at all. No.
Blabber's locked in.
I mean, C9's just going to be the best team again next year. I think a lot of people are just expecting that. And Blabber's just going to keep his dominance up, I'm pretty sure. But we'll see. Jungle's changing a lot next patch or next year. And there's a lot of like Rift changes coming as well as item changes. So that'll be really interesting to see.
And also a reminder, did Blabber win LCS this last summer? Did Blabber make top 8 at Worlds? No, he did not to either of those things. That was NRG, and it's looking like they're going to keep their roster together. So probably a two-horse race from what we're seeing if the rumors all
sort of keeping their roster together. They might be losing their support.
True, yes. So looking like who he in for Ignar. We covered a lot of the LCS roster rumors and such in yesterday's episode. Since there weren't any actual rosters announced, we just went through the rumors. So we're not going to cover all of those in this episode, but we will get through a couple of the other pieces of news. We talked about on the previous episode that the LPL English broadcast is rumored to not exist. It is getting axed by the production company. that Riot contracts out. From what Mazzella has told me and what he shared on the podcast yesterday was it seems like Riot has a contract with Tencent that they have to have some form of English broadcast. There have been people, notably Dom, taking to Twitter, announcing that he would be willing to put one together. Even notable names like Kelsey Moser, who has been on this show before, also produced Academy all of last year, said that she would be down to produce such a show. So there's a chance that there's a more grassroots feel for LPL. I don't know, Badger, you're probably the one on the podcast right now that kind of knows the most about the history of LPL. Did you watch back when it was kind of grassrootsy and
It
was like official?
I remember when it was Pyrotechnics and Froskeren sitting in somebody's basement casting like LPL like playoffs. They're both wearing like dress shirts with the same tie and like a vest. And people will be joking when I say this, but like they tried to, I think that was one of the good things about it was they were able to do their own thing. They were able to get like people who were really super knowledgeable about LPL in that had a passion for it. And that drove the project. And they just did. It was always a good time. Like they were super like supportive of it. And it was really cool. And like, I mean, if we go back to that, that would be awesome. But like the stability that like having an official like broadcast has is such a, like, I mean, Steve, in your position as someone who this is your employment, it's kind of better when you have the partnership with the actual company itself.
And that's a big part of this too, is there were, when a company's dropping a product like this, a broadcast like this, the obvious thing is they weren't making money, right? And if they're not making money, then they don't want to have to pay their talent because it's a net loss for them. If we move to something more grassroots, I highly doubt there will be the same rates.
Mongoose actually found the screenshot that I'm talking
all
about.
All the talent. Oh, wait, you did?
He posted it in host chat.
Oh, beautiful. So good. Can we get this posted into the actual community
I'll
Discord
post it
as well?
LPL.
That'd be hilarious. Yes, that is beautiful. So we might be back to that, everybody. Go check out the LPL channel in the Discord if you want to see what we're referencing. I hope that there is still something. I think there is a tiny chance that another production company comes in. I have heard of some that are asking and in inquiring with Riot as to how much it would cost, kind of what would go into it. It starts in a month and a half. LPL starts real early every year, so unlikely that we'll get it like an official broadcast partner for Spring Split. We'll see if any of those co-streams happen or if anyone else is just able to get those up. And of course, we'll share that on the podcast. If you're interested in watching LPL, we'll be sharing where you can find the matches. Other pieces of information. Mongoose, I know you were excited about this one because a certain support player who has been building up much of North American League of Legends, doing a lot of in-houses and tryouts, even in-houses recently this offseason, might be getting on a plane and going somewhere else. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, CoreJJ made a tweet a while ago that was like heading to Brazil, and everyone was like, what's this about?
What does it mean?
And then finally, there was a tweet today that he is going to be playing in one of the Brazil tournaments for one of the tournaments down there. It looks like a for fun tournament, but it's still really cool. Still a lot more integration between the North Americas and like the US and Brazil. So I think that's really, really cool. And I think people are really excited for it. So I think it'll be a nice mesh of the communities.
Yes, Brazil, notable member of the North Americas.
Of course.
As a region.
Yep. This is the North America education system going crazy right now.
It's cool though because it seems like CoreJJ, we can expand his title from like Bastion and Champion of North American League of Legends to Champion of the Americas and just developing League of Legends. Not only is he helping out our amateur players by putting on in-house tournaments and Discords, he even subbed in for one of the scouting combines that I was co-streaming this last weekend. because they needed a support player to hop in as a ringer. Now he's going to Brazil and, you know, getting involved in that community and that scene. So shout out to Core JJ. This guy just loves League of Legends and seems to love helping people get better at the game.
Conqueror of Worlds.
I can know
Core JJ.
Wait, I just
realized. World Championship was not enough. Now he has to win a title in every single region. He's going to save IPL for last.
I was curious because I know that I think Mad Magical was streaming the in-house games that he was doing tonight. Was that? I thought I saw a tweet about that. Or was that?
I'm not sure if he's doing more tonight. I know he was doing some yesterday. Okay, there's a chance he was doing them today as well, and I just didn't.
So I went to Twitter and checked. So you know the LoL World Championship account that they did for where they rebroadcast all the worlds going into the World Championship.
Yes. The Twitch account
pivoted.
Yeah.
They're streaming all of the regional finals from season 3 to season 13 leading into next year.
Whoa.
So I looked and they're streaming.
Wait, that's so cool.
They're streaming OGN summer or OGN spring 2014 finals right now between a little team called Samsung Blue and Najin White Shield.
Wow.
Sorry to pivot, but.
No, that's actually really cool. So that's just going to be going.
That's going to be going 24/7
next year.
It's 27 days. It's going to go 24/7. They've got the broadcast schedule up, but they're going in like chronological order. They're doing all the springs, all the summers, all the whatever.
That is incredible. I actually really love cool. that because we have. Oh, like a decade and a half at this point, basically, of games to look at. There, I mean, you could fill probably a whole year if we just went through every season. Could you imagine that?
Yeah.
Just have an entire year countdown for the next Worlds. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Well, what were some of the big news? Is there anything else we're missing?
I feel like there's one other one. And Kakoma are back together.
Kakoma.
That was pretty cool.
K-Koma. It is. So I don't know if anybody caught the Travis Gafford Hotline League episode that was happening yesterday, but that's apparently where or not apparently. I watch it so I can confirm. That's where Team Liquid Steve actually leaked that they are staying in Academy, staying in Challengers League next year. So Team Liquid will have a team. I'm hearing that FlyQuest will have a team as well, though I have not seen an official announcement. People are talking about it as if it's official, so there's a chance I just missed it. But looking like we will have two representatives there. And he also did not know at the time. Now I'm blanking on his name. Who's the coach for Team Liquid?
Oh, shit. It was Reignover.
Is it? Reignover. He was not aware that Coach Reignover's contract expired, and Liva and Travis Gafford Hotline League was like, no, he's going to be coaching next year, I'm pretty sure. And then Mark Z was like, well, his contract's expired, so you should probably talk to him about that. And then Steve kind of joked about it, but then fairly shortly after that left the call. So just kind of funny to see that, you know, maybe that's why some of these contracts are, or the rosters are waiting to get locked in and announced. But outside of that, a lot of the roster stuff that we had talked about, we already talked about yesterday. So we'll leave that to yesterday's episode. The only other things would be, I guess, Trimby that we didn't cover yesterday, I don't believe, looking like teamless for the winter split. So shout out to Trimby. Hope he's able to find a team. Oh, also, actually, there's one other one. Reckless.
Yeah.
You guys heard about that one?
That's pretty nuts.
T1 Challengers, Reckless.
Reckless going to T1 Challengers.
I was sitting. I had to go drop my laptop off for my wife at the school she teaches at yesterday. And I just got a message from somebody that said, holy fuck, T1 Reckless. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I hadn't had a chance to check Twitter. Like, I pulled my phone out to text her to be like, hey, I'm here with your laptop. And that's the first thing I just see is, holy shit, T1 Reckless. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, what? So I like scrambled to like Twitter and stuff like that and saw it was a sheep account release and was like, okay, cool. Yep. Interesting.
It's one of those moves where if you're T1, Like, what are the motivations to pick up a player like Reckless? Are they just trying to get the Reckless fans to come
get more eyes on Academy or Challengers now? League?
Challengers in Korea.
That's really the only thing I can think. Like, there's no way they're seriously looking at him as talent, right?
I'd like to think that maybe he reached out to, like, Joe Marsh and said, like, hey, because I know they picked up Griffin. So, like, yeah, they're giving players from the West a chance. So, who knows if it's a situation like that.
I mean, he also is role swapping, correct? Or is he playing bot lane?
He'd be support.
The only other thing I could think of, yeah, is that he wanted the opportunity to practice support. Nobody wanted to pick him up. So, yeah, you know, go to a team to help bring eyes, help bring fans over there while you get some experience.
You ready for the name of that team? The bot lane for T1 Challengers, if confirmed, is Smash Reckless.
That's the name of the team?
That's going to be their bot lane.
Bot lane. T1 Challengers ADs right now is named Smash. So it's Smash that's Reckless, and I don't think anybody's going to make any jokes about that whatsoever.
Nope.
Probably not. I imagine that one's going to go under the radar over most people's heads, rather. Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll keep our eyes on Reckless and how he performs.
I'm just excited.
Up and coming talent, you know?
Smash!
That's a great name for an AD carry.
It really is.
Dude, the Korean bot laners have such great names. Can't believe it. We could learn from it over here in the States. Just the one syllable, like, action words. Bang. Pow. Now I'm blanking on other ones, but, you know.
I mean,
power should be somebody's name if it's not.
It takes inspiration from the fact that when you win your first StarCraft player or StarCraft tournament as a Korean player, you just choose one of the words from Bohemian Rhapsody, and that's now your ID.
Wait, is that true?
That was a longstanding joke in the community. It's been memed in both the Korean community and, like, the Western StarCraft fandom that as soon as, like, you're like a highly prominent Korean player that comes up and is like starting to do it, so many of them have names that are words in Bohemian Rhapsody that someone's just like, you just have to change. You're legally obligated to change your name once you hit like the OGN StarCraft League to one of the words from Bohemian Rhapsody.
That is incredible. And Mongoose, if any members or anybody listening to this podcast right now wanted to let us know their favorite word from the song Bohemian Rhapsody that they think a player should name themselves after, where could they communicate that?
Drop it in general in the community Discord. No reason whatsoever. Just drop your favorite word from Bohemian Rhapsody. No context. Don't tell anyone. Keep it a secret.
I mean, you could add us if you want to. I don't mind that because I actually do kind of want to see them. But don't share the context with anybody else if they're confused. They got to watch the episode.
And come join the community Discord. Ton of fun. A lot of off-season content. Be a lot of fun stuff starting into next year as well. So come join. Get in early on Pick'ems. Get in early on Fantasy. It'll be a ton of fun. It's always a ton of fun. Start of the new year. Everyone gets to clean slate. So just come join, come talk about why Husha getting released from PC or PSG is really, really good for the region. Come talk about why Hellpigs is building a boomer roster and just is trying to build up the fan base that way.
And if you don't know anything that Mongoose just said, come tell him he's a nerd and nobody watches PCS. But also you should watch PCS.
They just signed a 29-year-old bot
laner. We love how passionate Mongoose is. Oh my God. That's 2 years older than Faker.
These old guys, they're that's running it back. Wow.
So you're saying I have a chance?
Of course. Of course.
Go pro.
It's your time.
All right. First, we'll try and hit Diamond, which we're still struggling with. But I think that's about it for news, unless there's any final topics, final things we wanted to get through. Or are we ready to talk about Worlds? Because that's what the primary focus of this episode is.
Thank you to the Patreons. You guys are awesome. You keep supporting us, and we hopefully give you enough content to where you guys are happy. And join the patron. And also, if you're the highest patron member, which I think is 10 or 15 a month, you might be a chance to join us for some off-season content. So that'll be fun.
True. Which I see Jax, I think it was Jax posted, he's already starting to work on some of the games that we can play. We have a lot of fun in the off season, and
I also am working on a on a quiz. Oh. So
ooh.
I started last week and I didn't want to say it, but I guess I'll say it now.
What's everyone's favorite game that we play? I'll go first. I love 20 questions. The 20 questions I think really are good. So fun. What about you, Mungus?
Probably Jeopardy, but also I'm really, really bad at all of the games. So watching other people struggle live is really, really fun for me.
That's good.
I think 20 questions is... I think 20 questions is good because I can just go back into the archives and find the most random obscure player
right. That
nobody thinks about anymore. That it's just like, yeah, you should know this guy.
There's so much strategy that goes into 20 questions, and it all devolves by the last 5 questions because we're like, God, we have no idea.
It's like, who the hell is this guy?
Is this guy even alive? Was he just like... Just players from the TV show Players don't count. Although, wait, that gives me an idea.
That'd be really
okay, you know,
fun.
We'll get off of that.
Next time.
Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody was living under a rock for the past month, maybe you're not aware of this, but a little tournament called the World Championships for League of Legends have been going on. It is crazy to think that they started like October 15th. 15th, I believe, was the qualifying event between Golden Guardians and BDS. So we're about a month and a week past that, and it's all wrapped up. It is all done, and we have a champion for the season 13? Season 13 champ? Season 13. World champs? Wow. Lucky 13. And surprise, surprise, we're just going to say it because there's no reason to not spoil it. You should know by now. T1 did it again. And not only that, Badger, how did they do it? What was the score line?
They didn't do a gentleman's sweep. They did an actual sweep. Mm-hmm. They did a 3-0.
They didn't give them a chance.
They really didn't have a chance. There was like, I was talking about it on the episode that'll come out for the Rosterpocalypse that wasn't a Rosterpocalypse, but like the first part of like game one was kind of actually like, ooh, Weibo looks good. And then T1 started to do the thing where they team fight better than any team in the world right now. And as soon as that started happening, Weibo lost all of their momentum for the next 2.5 games. And the next thing you know, T1's lifting the trophy. Hate to say it this way, but like,
I believe the first like 10 minutes of game one looked good for Weibo, and once they started dying, like once their bot lane started dying every single engagement, it was like, oh, this is looking
when they
a
were
rougher.
So like when they stopped gunning for Wei on the Maokai, like that's when it was like, oh no, like they just kill Senna TK every fight, and
yep,
and
Faker doesn't even need to land a charm. Faker landed like 10 charms out of the 50 he threw that game.
No, 10 is game. A generous number, honestly.
Yeah, true. But let's go through it game by game. Game one started off, I believe, was it Weiwei? It was the mid lane gank that got first.
Yeah, because they game. Like they went for a wraparound on Xiaohu.
Play in the jungle.
And
Flash W in, lock him down.
Yeah, they went for a play on Xiaohu under tower, and like Xiaohu lives with like 10 HP. And Faker's trying to like repush the wave. Xiaohu's like regen some HP, and Weiwei just comes around and flashes on him. Faker doesn't have flash, he dies. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and the crowd is for the most part silent.
Yeah,
first blood
they're
in game
so
one
quiet.
Of LPL versus LCK World Finals in Korea, and Faker gets first blooded. And I remember because I was at FlyQuest offices with the watch party there. Everyone was like, oh no, like, is this going to be the beginning of the end? Because a lot of people were hoping T1 would win, but in person, they were like, we don't know, actually. Weibo could take this one. And when that is the starting play, it's a little concerning to think, like, the general's getting targeted. But, hey, they bounce back. From that point on, an owner just kind of has his way with Weiwei for
Zeus,
pretty much the
Zeus
rest of the
game. Got super fed on Yone.
And he went so far
still,
up in CS early.
Busted ridiculous champion. And, I mean, they established very early on that red side, blue side doesn't matter for him. And T1, like, used red side super effectively. And it worked really well for them because they played through topside for the most part, and Zeus and Owner just controlled the map really well.
let's go through some of the general things before we hop into this intricacies of games 2 and 3. The Shy got first pick every game, right? He never got counterpick?
No, because they took blue side every single game. And this is the first Worlds where I think the narrative hasn't been blue side wins, like at least for finals.
Yeah. And that was a huge factor because Zayas had counters into the Shy's Aatrox, and it always felt like he was super comfortable in those matchups. Zayas had a much better performance this year than last year, and then even kind of flipped things around in that game 3. But by that point, they already had the momentum. Besides that, Faker got finally... he couldn't pick one of his 3 champions. He played for all of Worlds. They were all banned in the first round of bans, and then I guess second round, because he was like red 4 pick for the Ahri. But he had only played Azir, Orianna, and Nico, and they banned away the Nico.
Yeah.
Oh, Sylas, right. It wasn't
no,
Nico.
No. Nico was T1's permaban. They banned Nico every game.
Nico was banned against Xiao every game.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was Weibo that banned the Azir and the Sylas
in the first 3 every single game.
And I'm not going to say Faker's Ahri looked clean. I will even go as so far as to say he looked very uncomfortable on the Ahri, but he didn't need to do much more than just catch the waves and be in the fights and land Qs because of how Zayas was able to navigate everything. And even the bot lane as well. We did see the Senna Tahm Kench come out, which T1 had played, even NRG had played, but we locked in Kalista and Renata, and I'd say Guma Yushi played the Kalista incredibly well considering you're against, like, 3 champions that are going to slow you, saplings from Maokai, the engage from Maokai, trying to play Kalista into Aatrox can... Yeah, I mean, if you play it well, isn't too bad, but still can be very scary. But Guma Yushi didn't even die in that first game.
So the thing that I think that I alluded to yesterday when we talked about it, and if you're listening to it, you're going to get a sneaky double repeat on this. Kalista Renata just wins lane so hard against anything. It was the best lane in the entire on the entire world's patch, and Weibo just responded with Senna TK, and you can't do anything because Renata counters Tahm Kench. Like, there's just so much going on with it that they just fell behind in draft, and they were losing lane hard, and Weiwei just had to exert pressure, and he can never go bottom side. So you saw him work through top and mid. And it was working for a little bit. Like, they had some skirmishes, like 2v3s, 3v2s, 4v4s, whatever it is. But once the 5v5 started, you could just see the power of, like, the T1 comp of just, like, Zayus owner go in, control the fight, Faker plays around the outskirts of it, and Karia and Guma just come in and just clean up. Like,
and I gotta really say... difficult. In after pick ban, I was sitting next to Papa Smithy, and he was very vocal about his opinions on pick ban. It was hilarious to hear him talk about it. He said if Weibo lose with this draft, they lose 0-3. That was his prediction, because he actually favored Weibo's composition for the reason that they had scaling, better scaling with the Senna Tahm Kench and the Maokai Jace ability to control river and push people off of objectives. Mm-hmm. He felt that there wouldn't be a way for T1 to accelerate their comp fast enough to actually get the leads. Now, let's go through the numbers here for game 1, because there's something crazy that happened. There were 3 Flame Horizons in the entirety of game 1. Mm-hmm. Zayas Flame Horizons the Shy, Xiaohu Flame Horizons Faker, and Kumayushi playing, Kalista into Tahm Kench. A little unfair, but over Flame Horizons, almost gets double the CS. It was like 173 to 305 at the end. Kumayushi stomped that. So I would say outside of the Jace into Faker matchup, where he still died a couple times, he wasn't getting fed in kills, he just had a lot of CS. T1 was able to accelerate the game and got to very strong positions. Yeah, it was close for the first half, not very close for the second half. And then from that point on, the rest of the series did not get better. But final thoughts here for game 1, Muggers.
There was a moment in this game where I thought, like, Weibo had finally found, like, an opening. They've, like, Maokai ult mid. Guma Yushi is there alone. There's no one there. Guma Yushi somehow kites all the way away without flash, uses the cleanse very well. And then he lives the fight at like 10 HP. The rest of T1 finally collapse in and they just wipe Weibo. And that's when the game after that just felt completely unstoppable. But it was really, really well played from Guma, even though I feel like this was one of his more quiet series. It was just like moments like that where they're really overextending to kill this guy and he just doesn't die.
Yeah, I think MVP for the game, though, I would say is Owner on the Lee Sin. Mm-hmm. Pretty aggressive pick. I believe he picked it into Maokai Senna Kench. I think that was the three champion show, and if I'm remembering correctly.
He picked it on three, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wait, no. You're right. I think they picked a solo.
Yeah, it was Maokai.
He picked it on four because they banned Sejuel.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Regardless, when it was locked in, I just remember thinking, this is
he picked
a
it on
really
five. Oh, yeah.
Because
so it was Maokai B1, Kalista Renata R1, R2, then solo lanes, Jace Aatrox, right? Because that was the mm-hmm. strategy, was you take your top side and leave your bot side for mm-hmm. 4-5 if you're blue side.
For that big counter pick, Senna Tom Kench. Yep.
Huge.
Yeah, so they had Varus and Ashe banned away from them. And then it was Ahri on four, and they save five for Lee Sin, which TK also gets countered by Lee Sin, because as soon as you gobble somebody up, you can just get on the other side of them and kick them, and you get two kicks for the price of one. So
there,
it felt like T1 were super comfortable with that. They're like, mm-hmm. okay, if they go for the Senna Tom Kench, we have something that we're comfortable with.
There was a fantastic kick from Owner in this game, and everyone missed everything onto Xiaohu, yeah. and Xiaohu just like walks out. And I'm just like, that's one of those Faker charms that just missed, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But if you want to watch like a game for the competitiveness and you know, a world's finals performance, I would say the first game is probably the closest to that.
And the only game that you could actually probably you turn it off after like second, third, when they're going for third dragon fight, like you can turn it off and be like, Weibo still has a chance, and then just live in your little delusional fantasy world. So the thing about the thing that Mongu said earlier about the play on the Guma pick that they tried to do, I think that was the moment I realized they didn't know actually how to play the comp, because they don't want to go for like super hard engage with like with Senna Jace. Like they want to play like they're coming into us, Maokai can kind of turn that around, mm-hmm. because any sort of aggression sign, Maokai can just easily turn it into a disengage and a kite back. And I just felt like they didn't use that to their advantage properly, just given the champions they have. Jace speed up, Maokai ult for the disengage, saplings for control, Aatrox going in on a side and getting a flank and kind of like doing a pincer thing. This is the game that made me realize this is going to be a 3-0 and that mm-hmm. we could go to bed super early still, even though we were up at 4 a.m. to watch Worlds. So,
and luckily we did. But let's talk about through what happened in the rest of the series, because after game one, the best game, the closest game of the series, we had game two, baby. Woo! The Shy gets Aatrox again. This is the Shy's best champion, right? The Shy won't get bodied twice in a row on this. Surely
he won't lose a second game in a row against a second different
way.
Champion, right?
Come he on. Won't get solo Mongoose, killed.
I'm living in a delusional fantasy world, right?
GT fans are just like raging right now. GT fans are like, help!
This could
so
have been
the Shy
me.
Plays the Shy plays Aatrox into Zeus's Gwen, and well, I'm talking about Flame Horizon.
Yep, Flame Horizon again.
That is. Imagine getting Flame Horizon twice in a row on your signature champ in the World's Finals. This guy's got a skin for this champ. Right? Is it?
No.
I think
the Shy was Fiora.
Fiora.
Oh, okay. Never mind. All right. Well, then this is excusable. Never mind. Sorry for the slander. But so he does get bodied yet again.
He eed into Gwen Shroud so many times this game. I was just like, he's like, oh, you don't walk away from Gwen Shroud. You walk into it. Clearly, Gwen's no longer immune at that point, right? Like, that's how you play the matchup.
I don't need to hit my sweet spots. And he lost in lane. He lost in the team fights. Part of it was the fact Owner pulled out something pretty exciting here. Owner pulled out the Nocturne. And the Paranoia's, he wasn't like it didn't feel like they were the reason they won the game, but they're definitely part of the reason why they were able to cause so much chaos, because there's so many backline members here with the rest of Weibo's draft. They went for Ahri, Kalista, and Senna. That's not Tahm Kench Senna that's going to be able to save somebody from the Nocturne ult. That's two squishy bot laners that are like, oh God, the lights went out and we're going to die.
And the paranoia was really, really strong with a lot of the ultimates that T1 did have. Because there's a moment in Dragon Pit where they hit the paranoia and then Karia throws his ult and the Weibo doesn't see it coming at all.
They're not a Glass ult, yeah.
And it just eats all of them alive. And then they're able to do the same thing with Faker on Sylas stealing the Maokai ult. They can just sort of plug and play with both of those. And Weibo has no idea that an ultimate is flying at them. And it's just, it catches them all every single time.
Yep. Kumayu, she also pulled out the Draven. So a very aggressive pick into the Kalista and the Senna that can't really stop the Draven from just running at them. And Gumayushi gets a pretty early cash in as well in this game, so he gets accelerated on the pick. Was it a bot lane dive or was it?
No, it was
the mid lane.
I just remembered this. So the Shy has died twice top lane at this point. To throw this into context, they rotate Light and Crisp in the top lane to try and stop Zeus from getting the first turret. So the Shy just walks bottom lane. Yep. And owner Guma and Karia just walk up between the turrets and they just kill him.
Yep.
He's just slowly walking into lane. He has like Merc treads and a Dirk at this point, and Guma's on full Trinity Force. And he's just like, yeah, I think I can walk into this. I think I can stand any turret 1v3.
This is also notable. The game, Guma did not buy boots the whole game. It was one of the funniest things to watch because the casters didn't notice until much later. But a lot of people I was watching with noticed right away. They were like, oh, interesting. He's got a full item with no boots. Wait, he's got a second item with no boots. Why does Guma have a third item with no boots? And then he goes for a crit cloak for the last purchase before the end of the game.
He didn't need him because...
Yeah,
he's got Trinity and Blood Rush, and it negates it. So
it's just funny to see because
it's. I mean, there's the analytical sense of that. You can do that, or it's haha. He built no boots,
right? Right. No boots in the world finals. Woo! That's not Cassiopeia.
So I think T1 played this game the way that Weibo wanted to play game one with their comp, but they were able to do it with stolen Maokai ulti, paranoia, and hostile takeover combo. Of just creating enough space that they were able to secure objectives and they were able to control the river really well. And I mean, as hard as Weibo was also getting gapped once it got to the 5v5 point, that made it a little bit easier. But still, I mean, you have to give props to T1 for their execution, because I think they executed their game plan really well each one of these games.
Yeah. And honestly, my heart kind of goes out to Xiaohu at this point in the series, because this guy's just trying his goddamn hardest. He's the only one that doesn't kind of run it down in the game. He's 1-1-0 by the end of it. So, 1 KDA, you'll take it. Game 1 also, I believe he died twice. He is 1-2-1. So going into game 3, if we're just looking at KDAs, Xiaohu's sitting at a big old fat 1. The Shy currently sitting at 1-10-2
going into the third game.
Doesn't get any better from there. And bot lane, a combined heal to quick mass. So game 1, 0-6-3. And then game 2, 0-5-3. So 0-11-6 is their bot lane combined. And Xiaohu's like, guys, can we please hold it down so that I can take advantage of an aging, dwindling Faker who is not in his prime, and I can finally win this goddamn tournament?
Well, I mean, Xiaohu's game 2, between taking Fleet and building Kyrie Shard and then just selling it. I don't know how the FlyQuest office reacted to it, but I just looked and I said, that's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in a pro game. Like, didn't go for the static shiv, went straight into Liandry's after that. I mean, he kind of had to because he was already falling behind at that point. But the fact that it was like, oh yeah, he's doing ADRE, we could see like static shiv rush come out. Like, this build still works on Ari on this patch. And then it was just, no, he sold it at like 11 minutes and bought cooldown boots and just went into a normal Ari build. And
yeah.
Didn't feel effective.
Not do much. Yeah. No. That is a good point to make. I think part of it was realizing, oh, I don't think I can go 80 Ari in this comp, because realistically you're not going to do enough damage. And when everything was already falling apart so much around them, especially how top lane was going, you're like, I got to deal with a Gwen. I don't think I'm going to ever want to be in auto attack range of a Gwen. So yeah, he does go for the pivot, does not work out for them in game two. Any other things for game two that we want to cover? Any big points?
I think it's really sad for Xiaohu throughout this whole series, just because I feel like game one's the only game where he has any sort of agency in lane. And Xiaohu was like by far playing the best out of all the members on Weibo. And I felt like he just kept, like, especially the Ari, like on Ari, you are a facilitator. You're not going to have any like agency. It's going to be like, I throw charm and Everfrost, and if that shit hits, we kill someone. If not, he doesn't do anything. So I think it's really, really sad for Xiaohu that the rest of his team sort of just crumbled in the first two games. Because they were not prepared for the T1 flexibility and draft, and I don't think any team was. So I think like they're finishing game two and they're like, all right, we need to just try something else. We just need to like scrap everything we've done so far and throw something and hope that it works.
And that's something that they decided to scrap was the Aatrox priority. They instead go for Kennen this time around. Some more teamfight focus. Weiwei is on a carry off of the Maokai onto the Belveth. Xiaohu on Azir, and then Light and Crisp rocking out Varus. And of all things, playing Indicaria, the guy who plays this champion, Crisp pulls out Bard and says, I will get a Bard world skin. I will be the one to land the big Tempered Fates into Cosmic Binding combos. I've seen you do it, Caria. Can't be that hard. Oh, wait. I just ulted my team.
At one point, there's a Kennen ult, an Azir ult, and a Bard ult. Yeah. And it hit the exact same time in a team fight.
Oh, my God.
And Faker just kills like two people in the back of the fight while this is all going on.
I've never felt closer to a world's world's finalist performance than watching Chris play Bard and being like, that looks like me. I had so many people DM me afterwards like, this is reminds me of my duo queue games with you back when I would play Bard.
This draft is just pick me whatever, we can lose it, just pick me whatever so we can lose in fucking peace.
Kind of. Marcus, you wanted to hop in?
I'm part of like the only person I've subscribed to on Twitch is Fevenite, and people who don't know, Fevenite's like top 3 Bard in the world, arguably. She's a Korean streamer. And her whole chat and everyone was just flaming Crisp the entire time over this Bard performance. And she was posting like clips on Twitter all night. It was really, really funny watching her like explain the intricacies of Bard, and then Crisp would just do this like play that was just like the most like forehead like absolutely like opposite of anything that you would ever want to actually happen in the game. Even though his score line looks really good, yep. It was just like, you know, they were just trying stuff. And when the Bard got picked, I was like, this is a really bad Bard game. So even like outside of how he played mechanically, I think just like how the game was already looking to go, I think Bard makes like very little sense.
Very hard to pull off the Bard effectively into this comp. Everybody can dodge your ult. You're into an Aatrox, who's got a dash, a Lee Sin, who's got two dashes, essentially, a Kali, who's got a big dash, two as well, Gumayushi on the Xayah, who's got the ultimate to dodge it, and then Carry on Rakan, who's got two dashes. Like, that is so much mobility to try and lock down as a Bard that it's like, why didn't you just pick Rell? Or, you know, I think Nautilus was up here. You know, maybe Alistair's looking pretty good. I know the meta was shifting, but did not seem like it was shifting this way for Crisp. Notable, though, I did say Akali. Faker pulled it out, and there were not all of the usual bans. I mean, Azir was picked. The Orianna was banned already. Sylas was still up if you wanted to go back to that. But instead, he says, no, I'll go for the Akali. I'm happy with this one. I'm going to lock it in. And he kind of styled on them. Faker does still have hands. It was confirmed in game three of this World Finals.
It's like the beam where it's like, whoa, that got hands. This was like Faker Akali.
this man got hands.
And it was like, it was really cool. Even though I think like Zeus, once again, plays absolutely out of his mind this game. It was cool getting to see Faker actually like, do something, because the first two games he was like Sylas, which is just like, you know, half of his shit is point and click, and then game one is Ahri, and he missed like everything on Ahri, and everyone was just like, oh, Faker hands. And then the game three happened and it was like Faker hands, just sort of the flip. And it was really, really cool too, getting to see Faker play this into the Azir, which is like a matchup we saw last year where he's playing the Azir into the Akali a lot. And the fact that he won it pretty decisively against Xiaohu, who I think people are like arguably like top three mid laners, is like Faker, maybe Chovy, then Xiaohu. Faker was above and beyond like my highest ranked mid laner for this Worlds. And he just, he had the hands, but I think like something that you can't see is his leadership and the things that he's able to do macro wise. And I think this is just a game where T1 just pulled them apart macro-wise and just made them run all over the map, chasing them around.
But also micro-wise, there was that one really cool play. I think it might have been right after the Bard ulting the Shy, who's ulting on Kennen. But then they try and like portal out. Faker follows him up, gets a triple kill. There's a moment he hits a shuriken. I want to say it's on Xiaohu. And all of us in our mind are like, if he takes that back, it's a one-way trip. He takes it back, it is a one-way trip, but he gets another kill for it and then locks everybody else in place because they're all like, get Faker. And then the team's able to clean up afterwards. So it's like, still cool to see Faker executing mechanically as well as, them just kind of running Weibo around the map. Weibo only gets two turrets this game. They don't pick up any neutral objectives. T1 just kind of controlled the entire game. It's a quick four dragons into a Baron into a game over. 25 minutes, 47 seconds was the time at the end of game three. And I believe it was the fastest game in the series. The other two went to like, 30 minutes, 31, and 29 minutes. 57.
If they would have finished it in 25 minutes and 21 seconds, it would have been the fastest world final ever, beating the IG Fnatic series.
Wow.
Which the Shy would have gone from setting the record to being the record.
Oh, that does not feel good for the Shy. And the whole series does not feel good for the Shy. Remember what his KDA was going into game number three?
116 and 5 is what he finished the series as. I don't know. It was a level of performance.
It was 110 and 2 going into the final game. 116 and 5 was the final stat line of the top laner that everyone was saying, this is the guy, you know? Or maybe not everybody. There were some doubters in the Shy. Some saying he was slightly fraudulent, but Zayas showed up. Zayas had an incredible series.
And this is also like after finals finished, like they were showing like people like getting up from the chairs and everything, and T1 obviously happy, but Weibo Gaming, like the Shy was even smiling afterwards. Like I don't think anyone on Weibo was really like showcased like being like super emotional. I think a lot of these players were just like really excited to be here in finals, because coming in as the fourth seed, like no one thought they should have been there as the fourth seed. And the fact that they made it all the way to finals, I think is really, really amazing. And I think it just showcases like what everyone thought about this roster was like on any given day, they can flip heads or they can flip tails.
Yep.
And if they had flipped heads, I think it would have been a 5-game series. But they unfortunately did not in every role except for probably mid lane. And
I want everyone to think about this piece of information here. Weibo made it to the world's finals by only beating one LPL team in a best of five, no LCK teams. T1 won the world's finals, and their last four opponents were all four LPL.
They went 11-1 against the LPL in best ofs this in like game score.
That is what we call in the industry undisputed world champions. The undisputed best team in the world is T1. Congratulations to Faker for his fourth world championship. Congratulations to everybody else for bouncing back after last year's world championship, where they were right at the precipice, really close series, and they were not able to get across that finish line. But this time they right those wrongs, and we are not getting that luck skin because Caria did not play it. So we'll have to go back again next year so Caria can get that one.
And an interesting thing that someone on broadcast said, this T1 roster has the most games internationally together as a five-man unit. So they got it this year at Worlds, got that record. I don't know who held it before then, but it will be exciting if they are back next year as the same roster. It seems like, I don't know how much of like the post-game interviews y'all watched or kept up with, but they...
I did not catch any of them.
They were like asking them if they like wanted to stay together, and people were like kind of like stepping around it, and Kerry was giving his answer, and it was like, yeah, it'd be really cool if we got to play together. And like as soon as that happened, Faker and owner both look at Zeus, and Zeus just like sort of just starts laughing. So I think it's like the four of them want to, and Zeus is like fielding offers and like listening.
Yeah, I believe Zeus's contract is up, and I think Guma Yushi's is up. But Guma apparently said in an interview or on record that if they win Worlds, he'll stay on the team. And then they did win Worlds, so Zeus is the only one like not Zeus in the core that might be leaving.
Which would be really, really sad, but the fact that they like both just like turned like Faker and owner at the same time, I'll have to find that clip. But that's really, really funny. And all of their like post-game interview stuff is really, really cool for anyone that wants to go watch it. I think like immediately after game stuff was really cool, but I think they were all just like so hyped up on like winning Worlds that it was hard for them to like focus on actual answers. And then once it like sort of calmed down a little bit, they were actually able to get like more coherent answers and thoughts out. But it was still really, really cool. And I'm so excited for my T1 jersey to come with Faker on the back. I ordered it back in August, and it still isn't here because it was like a pre-order thing for their pink jerseys, which Faker only wore once because Poby was in the other games that they were wearing it. So I will have a very, very exclusive T1 item.
That's going to be really cool, actually. Post a picture of that in the Discord when you finally get it. That'd be awesome. But that's it. That's World Championships for 2023. T1, is this what, the fourth time the org has also picked up a victory? The first time since Joe Marsh comes in, they rebrand from SKT to T1, and they're back, baby. Mm-hmm. They have claimed the title once more. Faker's international trophy cases now, four world trophies and I believe two MSI trophies, is that correct?
And to think that we were one win away from him having another MSI and a one win away from him having another Worlds. So it's kind of insane.
I hear that guy's pretty good at League of Legends.
He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, shout outs to T1. Shout outs to everybody who stuck with us through all of the world's coverage and content. It's crazy to think that it's over now. I mean, it's such a big chunk of our year as League of Legends fans. And there's always, I don't know about you two, there's always like a little bit of hangover for me afterwards of coming back down to real life when Worlds is done. And we have a full off season ahead of us. So before we put a pin in it, I want to get everybody's favorite memory. Think back to Worlds itself. Over a month-long event, some of the highlights, you don't have to just say one, but at least one of your highlights or your favorite memories that happened. Could be in-game, could be something that happened in the standings, could be a memory with friends, maybe in the Discord, something that you had come up. If either of you are ready with one, you can go. Otherwise, I'll go with
mine. I'll go with mine. I think seeing Brazil get a pentakill at Worlds was really, really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And being sort of like in the CBLOL, like English sort of realm, just watching those guys get to react to it live, and people that just like absolutely love the region, and seeing the Discords pop off and seeing all that, and everyone just like all the Brazil hype was really, really cool. And the fact that those guys were even able to do like a live like broadcast of watching CBLOL was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. That's a good one. Badger, do you have one yet?
watching KT get absolutely bracket fucked as a KT kid. Yeah.
Not what I was expecting, but you know what? We'll allow that. They did get kind of bodied. They got
absolutely bracket fucked the entire time and still made quarters. So
true. Good for them, honestly. And then they were against JDG in quarters, right?
Yeah, they played JDG in quarters.
Oh god. Mine's gonna be the complete opposite of that. My favorite. I don't think this is gonna be a surprise to anybody. NRG making it out of the Swiss stage and into the bracket stage. But more importantly than that, 2-0-ing G2. We will now have it on record that at Worlds, NA did better than EU. Hell yeah. Let's go.
I also want to do like some production like shout outs, like Caster Jun. I'm so happy that we have him around. He has been so hype, and the level of hype that he's like been able to maintain over the course of his career without losing his voice is absolutely insane. And like all the intros to like the semifinals games, I don't remember that, or like quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. I don't remember that in previous years. So if it happened in previous years, I completely forgot about it.
Well, they don't usually have Caster Jun. Unfortunately, they don't usually have Caster Jun do it if it's not in Korea.
Well, I mean, like, just like the videos that they had before, like each matchup that they would play. I don't know if like,
oh, they do those every year.
Well, the ones this year were especially good. And the transitions for Faker were really, really good. Like him going from like crying to like looking up in like the throne. That one was good. The one where he's like looking back and then it transitions to him like with like the shush was really, really good. Mm-hmm. So shout out to whoever put those together and actually like spliced the videos together. That was really, really cool. And a really, really good idea.
And I think shout out as well to the finals cast too. I thought they did a great job for a world finals. Atlas from the LCK, props to you. Not many people can play by play shoutcast a world's finals and deliver on the hype for it. So
Atlas is really good. Yeah. Like
he's very good at his
Atlas
job.
And Chronicler is great, and then you throw Azale in there, and it was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think all of the casting pairs that they had were really well done for worlds this year.
I'd agree. So Worlds is in the books, everybody. We'll be back, of course, with regular weekly episodes still here for off-season content. Hopefully rosters will actually start getting locked in over the next week so we can talk about them in future episodes. But even if not, we will have plenty of content planned. And a reminder for anybody who's not already a patron member, that if you join, you can still get a chance to hop into one of our episodes because we will have the Patreon episode where the top tier members can come on and play some games with us. That's it, though, for episode 200, or not 287, 487? 487 of the League Rundown. If you are listening anywhere, make sure to give us 5 stars or a thumbs up or anything you can to help support the podcast. It really does help support the podcast and help us get known. We're trying to get even more guests on, especially in this off season. And sometimes it's just a little easier if we can flex, hey, you know, we have this rating. So if you have the time, we really appreciate it. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We love you, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. We'll be right back.